Welcome to the Inside Light podcast, a space for healing, self-connection, and all things spiritual. I'm Terry, also known in the sober world as Sassy Sober Mum, and I believe that within each of us lives a guiding light, a quiet, powerful presence that always knows the way. Here, we'll explore the many paths back to that light. Together, we'll dive into stories of healing, practices that bring us home to ourselves, and conversations about awakening. Those moments when we remember who we truly are. Whether you're seeking clarity, courage, or simply a reminder that you are not alone on your journey of life, this podcast is here to hold space for you. Because the light inside you has never gone out. It's always been guiding you, waiting for you to come back home. This is the Inside Light podcast. Let's begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast this week. I am so excited to talk to you today. I was meant to do a meditation, but I just can't quieten the fire inside about, clicking record and talking to you about all the things I want to talk to you about. So I actually had a whole podcast outline already defined, already pre-uploaded. But I don't want to do that this week. I want to talk to you about my incredible week last week, just in terms of the shifts and the things that I experienced and the lessons that I took from last week. And I just thought that that would be valuable to share with you all. Hope you're all okay. Hope you've had a good weekend. The sun is shining beautifully today and the sky is so blue and the light is so bright, so much so that I have to put the blind down in my kitchen where I'm sitting. It's like the light is bursting, dying to come into the room. But it's warm still as well. It's autumn, but it's still a little bit warm. And I'm feeling in a good place. Like, I've got a good energy. I woke up this morning at 6:05, and I've been doing this morning breath work Monday to Friday, and it's through the app BreathPod, which is a really, really cool app, and it has lots and lots of different types of breathwork meditations. And at the moment I'm doing one of their courses, which is called Believe in Yourself, and it's 15 days. They do it across 3 weeks because they do it live at 6:30 in the morning from Monday to Friday, and then they have the weekends off. So I'm kind of mirroring that, but I'm doing it on the replay because I get up a bit earlier. And I'm really enjoying it actually, and it's part of this episode is talking through some of the things that came up in this breath work, because it also had a workbook that you had to download with questions on, and I've been journaling on those questions quite a bit, and a lot came up for me last week, which I will talk you through. And so, where do I start? So last week I started this breathwork, and it is talking about limiting beliefs and the beliefs that are essentially wired in from our very, very early life. And we carry around these beliefs often without checking in with them for most of our lives. And that's really powerful. But it's also in a way, it's also quite sad because I think I know for myself, speaking from experience, that I've been operating on a belief system that's just not true, but that I have made part of myself. And so the things that were coming up for me last week were three core beliefs that I decided to have more awareness around and try to reflect on as a way of trying to learn how to let those beliefs go, or at least replace those beliefs with more helpful beliefs. So for me, the beliefs that were coming up were that my voice is not important, the belief that I'm not good enough, and the belief that I never have any time. I have no time. I'm too busy. So maybe some of you resonate with that or resonate with one of those. But part of the exercise of thinking about the beliefs was to go back into where those beliefs were formed, or to try and remember when those beliefs felt true. Now, I can't remember if this was part of the actual exercises, or whether this is just something that I managed to intuitively come up with myself. Either way, it doesn't really matter. But I had a bit of a breakthrough on all of those beliefs. I think actually there was another belief as well that had been coming up for me, which was that almost like a scarcity around money, and that, you know, I might run out of money, or that money is something that is not abundant in my mind, in my mindset. And so when I was working through these different beliefs, I was thinking back to times when these beliefs might have been coded in, if you like, into my system. And it got me thinking about, the kind of my voice is not important, which actually was linking to another belief of I'm not clever enough. So actually that's five beliefs, isn't it? Not three, but yeah. All of these beliefs essentially were coming up anyway last week. And one of them was I'm not clever enough. One of them was my voice is not important. I'm not good enough. And that there's like almost a scarcity mindset around money. And I'm always busy. I don't have enough time. That's five core beliefs that I think I have that are wired and hardwired in me. So when I started to try and delve into where did these come from, I remembered that actually in my childhood, it was a bit of a joke actually. And it's definitely, you know, unintentional, but my dad used to say, he used to laugh at me and say, oh, you're thick as two short planks. And it was kind of a bit of a joke. I was a bit of a clown as a kid, to be honest. And I was quite scatty. And, you know, I sometimes say or do things, you know, silly things, or maybe the wrong thing in the moment. I think some of that early undiagnosed autism, ADHD, probably, you know, didn't help with that. But I would carry around this kind of like, oh yeah, I'm a bit thick. And that would be the kind of messages that I think I would get. Especially my dad would always laugh and say, you're basically you'd be dangerous if you had a brain. But I think even though that was joking and that wasn't intention, he didn't say that to hurt me, I definitely think I carried that belief of I'm a bit scatty, I'm a bit stupid, I'm a bit thick. And then when I was at school at 15, I started to stop going to school, which I now recognize was an early, you know, it was school avoidance, what we would now call ESBA. But it was school avoidance, probably because, yeah, I was neurodivergent. I was struggling with the school system and the expectations and the demands of school. And I didn't have that much of a supportive infrastructure at home. I didn't really have parents that were prioritizing, you know, whether I was doing my homework or not. There wasn't a lot of that going on in my home. And so I just stopped going to school. It's also around the time that I started drinking and getting involved in other substances and, you know, maybe the wrong crowds and going a little bit off the rails. But I stopped going to school and I got expelled for truancy, basically. And I remember, I've got this memory that's really, really clear in my mind of accompanying a friend into school to get her exam results. And she got her exam results and she did really well. And I was with her and I didn't even sit my exams. I don't even think that I was given I don't even know if the letters came through. I think I remember the letter coming through and it had already passed or something like that. So there was an issue with the letters coming through about when my exams were. But even still, I'm not sure if I would have done them. I don't know. But anyway, we went to see the head teacher. And I've never forget him. He's called Mr. Hardcastle. And he was praising my friend. You know, you've done so well. You should be so proud. Like, all this stuff. And I was just standing in the room listening. Now, when I think back at that, I was thinking, what were you doing there, actually, in that room? Like, why did you go in that room? But anyway, I was in the room as well. And after he'd finished talking to her, he turned to me. And he said exactly these words. He said, "And what about you then?" And I remember just looking at him like a bit deer caught in the headlights. And he said, "What about you? What are you gonna do now? What are you doing?" In that sort of like, you know, tone of disdain, like really judging me, looking down on me. And I think I said, I don't know. And at that point, I genuinely didn't know. I did actually go on to college and I did a BTEC first, which got me 5 GCSE equivalent Cs. And then I did a BTEC national and I did really well at college. But at this point in time, when I was standing in this headmaster's office, I had no idea what I was going to do. And so I said, "Oh, I don't know." And he said, he looked at me and he said, "You will never be anything. You will never amount to anything. You will probably be in a council flat, pregnant before you're 20, and you just won't do anything with your life. You're a waster," he said. And I think, like, obviously now, as a grown woman, when I look back at that, I think, that's disgusting. Why would you say that to a 15-year-old child, essentially? You know, that you'd have no idea what's going on in that person's life and what they're having to manage in their life. But for me, as a 15-year-old standing in that office without the ability, I hadn't learned how to stand in my power back then. And I didn't lean into sticking up for myself or any kind of confrontation until much, much, much later on in life. And I stood there and I almost literally just swallowed up those words and gulped them down as if they were true. And I've carried that for most of my life. Whenever I've had jobs, I've never felt clever enough. Whenever I've, you know, applied, especially in my career, I think this narrative really played out in my career, always thinking that I'm going to get caught out, always thinking that I don't deserve things, not believing in success. If success comes, thinking it's going to go really quickly because it's not for people like me. I don't deserve that. And I just find that really... you know, I found that really interesting last week to connect the dots on, I'd formed this belief and had carried this belief that I'm not clever enough, which, to be honest, in my everyday life now today, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. But I still have fear sometimes around, well, for example, releasing this podcast. You know, I've pushed several episodes out into the podcast world and I'm still having those thoughts coming up that, well, no one's going to listen to it. This is not good enough. Who are you to talk about this stuff? You know, you're not qualified. You're not clever enough. You know, that stuff still bleeds into my thinking sometimes, especially when I'm pushing myself out of my comfort zone, like with this podcast. And so it's useful for me. It was really useful for me last week to connect with that. It was the same with the thing around money. You know, I've got my work and I'm very committed and passionate about my work. And actually, I've been relatively stable financially. Like, I've had the same amount of income for a long time, and you know, I can trust it. But I grew up in a home where money was always a problem. It was always an issue, always caused huge arguments between my parents. And I would hear things like, I'm not made of money. Or, money doesn't grow on trees. I mean, I think some of you might resonate with this. You might, you know, remember that from your own childhood. Like, that was a really common theme in my early life, that money was always scarce, or would always come and go, and that would create lots of problems in adult relationships around me. And we couldn't afford things. We can't afford it. I can't afford it. And there's all this stuff around, you know, money just being this kind of quite elusive thing that only special people had. And I've definitely carried and held that belief into my adult life, even when I've had jobs that have paid good money, or when I've had security, like I've had money coming in regularly, I pay my bills, I make sure everything, you know, I still hold this belief that, well, what if it all goes tomorrow? Like, it could all just dry up and it could all go. And so I think as well, for me, realizing that is linked to those early messages that have sort of been stitched into my inner fabric, if you like, that I'm carrying. So sometimes that impacts my decisions as an adult when I want to, maybe if I want to buy something for myself, or maybe if I want to think about taking a break with work, or pausing work, or allowing myself more time. And you know, it's just that constant kind of running, that constant whirring of the tape that, you know, be careful, the money might run out, it might go. And so that's, you know, that's been a kind of constant in my life as well. And I think that feeling of not being good enough, not needing to fit in with other people's expectations, you know, and I think probably a lot of people can relate to this, having grown up, you know, maybe in strict homes or just society in general, you know, there is a belief that we all need to just follow this, get on the treadmill and run at the same pace as everybody else, do the same things. Don't, you know, stick your head up. Don't bring attention to yourself. Put your head down. Just follow the rules. Follow the way life is and you'll be fine, kind of thing. And and I think that, you know, that, but also specifically for me in my life, I, you know, heard a conversation between my mum and dad when I was really small, that my mum was upset that my dad was showing me too much attention and too much love, and did he not love my mum more than me? And that kind of conversation that when you're really small just doesn't really make sense, and is easy to think that there's something wrong with you because you're hearing your name coming out in a heated discussion when you should be asleep in bed, but you're ear is stretching down the stairs so that you can hear what's being spoken. And, you know, I think that I carried that belief, you know, with my mum, because I had a tumultuous relationship, I suppose, with her. It wasn't a safe relationship in my life. And I carried that belief that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't good enough for her. I wasn't good enough for her. She was irritated by the fact that my dad might love me more than her, kind of thing. Now, as a grown up, I can I can reflect on that and think, well, my mum had her challenges in life, and maybe my mum, you know, my mum at 20, however age she would be, 25 when this happened, she's still only just maturing herself cognitively. You know, we don't mature until mid, late 20s. So yeah, she's obviously feeling insecure in her relationship with my dad, and that's coming out. But when you're 7, 8, 9, you don't think in that way, obviously. And so again, I just gulped down that information and just believed that to be true. And so that shows up not as frequently, but it's still, you know, it still comes up sometimes, you know, that belief or those beliefs still come up sometimes in moments. They catch me off guard, or when I'm feeling a bit weaker in my confidence around something, or if I feel like I'm pushing myself up my comfort zone, or I feel exposed and I feel vulnerable, those things come up and they tap me on the shoulder saying, hey, this is the stuff that we believed when we were little, and this is the stuff you carried with you most of your life, and so this is all you know. But it's not all you know. It's not all you know. It's not who you are. And I think that when these things are left unchecked, we just carry them around like a bag of bones or something on our backs, and we don't take the bag off and rummage through and throw the bones we don't want away. I don't know why I'm using bones, by the way. But, you know, you get my point. So that was quite, for me, it's simple stuff, but it was quite, combining that with the breath work, it was quite groundbreaking for me last week. Just knowing that, here I can identify where some of these unhelpful beliefs, how they were imprinted. And I found that quite powerful, because it also helped me to realize that it's not me, that these beliefs came from situations outside of me. They didn't come from inside me. We're not born with those sorts of beliefs, right? They come from outside of us. And I think recognizing that is powerful, because if we recognize that it comes from outside of us, then we have to then connect with the fact that there's something within us, and maybe the thing within us is the really powerful kind of loving, that deep connection with ourselves, and that everything that's on the outside that's coming in, if we let it in, maybe we can let it back out again. If we let it in, we can filter it out. And if we learn to filter it out enough, then maybe it then is not our belief anymore. Therefore, it's not who we think we are. Therefore, it isn't who we are. We're something else. We're something better. So yeah, quite a groundbreaking week on that front. The other thing that happened is I had an Akashic Records reading. It was my second Akashic Records. And if you don't know what Akashic Records are, because I didn't up until a year ago, it's the first time I'd ever heard of it, to be honest, once I started exploring my spirituality. In fact, actually, it's not even a year ago, because I hadn't spiritually opened up properly until maybe the sort of December time of last year. So yeah, it's kind of 10 months ago. And I started to learn about all of these new terms. And Akashic Records is essentially, it's like the library, the inner library that holds all of the details of every past life, thought, action. Everything is contained in this kind of mystical, invisible, but very detailed kind of appendix of our soul's journey. So it's not of our life in this lifetime, it's of every lifetime that we've had. And people usually access the records if they want to find information about past lives, if they want to heal past life trauma, if they want to maybe understand who and why they're connected to certain people in this life. To be honest, it probably holds more than I can explain, because I'm still learning about it as well. But I was just interested in it. And so I'd booked a session. I had a session earlier in the year and I found it quite powerful. And I did a session last week. I had this Akashic Records kind of healing, clearing session with this lady, and it brought up a past life where I was an apprentice, a kind of spiritual apprentice, a woman in the woods who used to work with plants for medicine and herbal medicines. And yeah, I think there was something to do with, I was quite frustrated in that lifetime because I was the apprentice and I really wanted to be the master. And obviously I had to wait until the right time. But essentially it was just that I was this woman in the woods, had quite a simple life. And, you know, we all know that, yeah, I mean, this the timing of this must have been several hundred years ago. And a lot of these types of women maybe were fearing for their lives because they might be accused of being a witch. And there is a big part of our history that, you know, witches got burnt at the stake. And so there's all of that, you know, all of that sort of stuff to think about. But anyway, it was this woman in the woods. And interestingly for me, it's not the first time that this has come up. So I worked with another soul coach or soul practitioner who had also separately, like completely unconnected to this other lady, but had also identified that I was an alchemist. I was a woman in the woods that I worked with plants and herbs and basically I helped to create transformation, but using things from the land. And so it was obviously, you know, for me, when this came up in this reading, I was thinking, oh, okay, that's interesting, because it's not the first time I've had this message. And I don't believe in coincidences anymore. You know, I think everything is divine timing, it is for a reason, that there is this sort of sacred and invisible geometry that's at work. And so when these sorts of things happen, I think, oh, that's, you know, not a coincidence, that, you know, there must be some truth in that. And so anyway, interestingly, it came up quite a lot in that session. The things that came up were the word boredom and obviously the woods, but also the rocks and the lichen on the rocks. Now, to be honest, I didn't know what lichen was, but it is a type of moss, I've since realized. And it's just that the moss is not extravagant, you know, it's not dramatic, but it's very important to the rock. And it's very kind of low profile, but it's very stable and it's very slow growing. And essentially, yeah, it's a very important part of the ecosystem. And that this was really coming through in my Akashic Records practitioner, that the word boredom, this rock, all these rocks, this lichen, this moss on the rock. And I was saying, I'm the kind of person that never gets bored. You know, I'm always so busy. I've always got a really big to-do list. I'm always doing. And I think the message really was, allow yourself to get bored. You know, allow space for boredom. And it's interesting because it kind of coincides with last week, I was feeling a shift where that I wanted to pull back even more and make more time for myself and to create more space in my life. Because I feel like I've been running at 100 miles an hour for a really, really, really long time. And very much I wake up and every day it's like, I can't do that, I can't do this, I can't do that. All very can't energy, because I've got this and I've got that and I've got this to do and I've got that appointment and da 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 da. It's just like bang, 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 do, 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 do. It's very masculine energy. You know, masculine energy is very doing energy. Whereas feminine energy is very the opposite. It's kind of not doing. It's space, it's spacious. It's allowing more flow and creativity. So it was interesting that this came through my Akashic Records because when I tried to take it too literally, like you are getting bored, or I was like, I'm not getting bored, I don't get bored. Almost like not being bored is a badge of honor. Almost like, you know, when you think again back to childhood and you think about the messages that you're given as a child, you know, I would have been told, or I was told, only boring people get bored. And sometimes I say that to my children. Like on autopilot, because that's what I believe, because that's what I was told as a kid. Only boring people get bored. Go and do something. You've got loads of toys in your room. Go and play. But actually, I think that there's something in boredom that we miss. And I see this actually when I work with my coaching clients, when I do my coaching, I see that there is a real aversion to boredom. People don't like to be bored. You know, people don't like to sit with themselves. And I wonder why. You know, maybe it is something to do with that, you know, that early connection with ourselves that gets a bit, that gets severed, essentially, because we get all of these messages and all of this coding, all of this hard wiring that's not really ours, but that we just accept and take on board because we don't know any better, we don't know any different. And you know, when I think about that, I think about there's a negativity in my life around being bored, because it's almost like I believe that if I'm bored, I'm not good enough. And then I'm a better person if I'm not bored. I'm winning the game of life by not being bored, because I don't let myself get bored because I'm so interesting and into so many things. It's like something that I feel very proud of. I don't know if you can relate to that. But actually, what does that really mean? You don't allow yourself time to sit and to have time and space to think, to ponder, to connect with yourself, to get creative, to hear the innate whispers of nature and your inner wisdom. We don't allow that time because we're always in this masculine energy, especially as women. Do, do, do. Look after everyone else. Make sure everything gets done. Make sure there's milk in the fridge. Have the kids done their homework. Have you exercised enough this week? Even meditation and journaling becomes a thing to do, to do, to do, and then a thing to berate yourself for not doing because you're not doing it enough, or you're not meeting your own internal demands. So when I was thinking about this little woman in the woods, you know, that was just probably woke up and let the day dictate to her what she was doing. Perhaps if it was raining when she woke up, maybe she would make some of her medicines inside. Maybe she would sit in front of the fire and keep warm and daydream. Perhaps if it was really sunny, she would go out and pick new mushrooms or pick flowers or go on an adventure. Maybe she would drop in and say hello to someone, make sure that someone was okay if somebody had not been very well that week. Perhaps nature dictated what she did, which is so very, very different to my life. My diary dictates what I'm doing. Every day I wake up, it tells me for every minute of my day what I should be doing. And I take a lot of comfort in that. You know, as an autistic person, don't get me wrong, there's a lot to be said for a color-coded diary with reminders. But it's also quite trapping, isn't it? All these things on the list, all these things to achieve in a day, no time and space for nothingness, no time and space to go to the woods and see the rocks and the lichen on the rocks, no time and space to go slow and grow slowly like the moss would on a rock. So I kind of had this real waking up last week that I was essentially doing this to myself. Like, don't get me wrong, there are many things to get done, but as much as I can say, I'm so busy, I could actually, if I really wanted to, I could clear my diary. Okay, it would be a bit inconvenient, but I could do that. And so it started to dawn on me that is having enough time a mindset issue? Is it really a physical reality thing, or is it a mindset issue? Every day I just wake up busy with a whole list of things to do. But what about, what would it feel like to not have those things? Or at least what would it feel like to tell myself that I have got time, and that I have got space in my life to do different things, to be spontaneous? So anyway, there was an open evening last week for my middle child. We went to a school. So I'd had the Akashic Record on Tuesday. And then on the Thursday, whilst I was pondering all this thing around beliefs, and I was doing my morning breathwork practice, and I was kind of stitching together the way that the old programming in my life was showing up in my current day-to-day life. So I was kind of reflecting on all those things, and thinking about this little woman in the woods. And I went to this open evening, and we went into the history classroom. And there was two or three tables, big tables, full of things. The first one was World War One, and there was something else. And then I gravitated towards the table in the corner. It was a huge table, and on this table, it had the sign "Medieval Medicine." I thought, oh, that's interesting. And there were these little cups of herbs. There were these sweetie frogs and sweetie worms, and there were these plastic bugs. And I thought, isn't that uncanny? And then there was a teacher, obviously the history teacher, was standing there, and there were a few other parents surrounding this table. I mean, the timing of all of this was quite unusual, because we sort of walked into this room, we walked up to this table, there were a few other people hanging around, and then almost 30 seconds after we'd got settled at looking at this table, the teacher started saying, "Let's talk about a cunning woman. A cunning woman is somebody who used to live in the woods, would work with the land, would make medicines and herbal remedies, and was probably a spiritual woman who would be a little bit like the local or the village doctor, with those slightly alternative practices, but would be highly regarded in society, but lots of people might see her on the quiet. You know, she was a bit like a witch. And I was thinking, this is utterly bizarre. I mean, what are the chances of, in the same week that I had an Akashic Records reading about that, describing exactly that, that I would then go into this open evening at the exact timing where they would have this table with this medieval medicine, out of all the points in history, why that one as well? And then this man would literally, this teacher would be talking about essentially one of my past lives. It was so bizarre. I couldn't stop but I could feel myself smiling on the inside, because I felt like this is a universal nod to me saying, trust it, Terry, trust this information, trust your divine connection, trust the universe. This message is here. Okay, we're not sending you a bright rainbow angel hovering in your kitchen, which I'd quite like, thank you very much. We're not sending you that, but this is what we're sending you. This is the confirmation that we're sending you in this moment, that maybe you need to believe that all of this is true and real. Even though I do feel like it's all true and real, it's still really nice to get these little nudges from the universe, these little moments of confirmation. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I had no idea what a cunning woman was, right? I walked out of that classroom. I ChatGPT'd, what is a cunning woman? And it just went bang, all the information exactly as I'd, you know, it'd been described to me earlier in the week. So I knew that this was important. Not only was it an important part of my soul's history, there was something that was being brought to me in this moment, in this particular week. So I meditated for a little bit on this little lady in the woods, this little lady that might have been me 1,000 years ago. And I said, what is her name? What is her name? And the name immediately came to me as Greta. And I ChatGPT'd, is Greta a name of this kind of, you know, would this have been a real name? And ChatGPT said, yes, this was a really well-known name, especially, you know, in this country, around those times, medieval times, and a cunning woman would have been called Greta. Like, yes. So that's what she's called. That is, you know, that is who she is. Greta, that's her name. And I've been thinking about Greta, and I've been trying to bring some Greta energy into my day. You know, when I wake up, I think about Greta. I think about her in the woods. I am thinking about her more and more. I'm thinking about the simplicity of her world. And whilst it's not practical to just go back to that, to go back to that life right now, and I'm not sure I'd want to be honest. I do like my life, but I do recognize that I need to make more space. I need to bring more Greta energy into my world. And, you know, thinking about the rock and the lichen, and thinking about my diary and all the busyness, and thinking about the beliefs and all of the cognitive thinking stuff that's going on every day, of which a lot of it is just regurgitating beliefs from our childhood that were wired in externally into us internally. I was thinking about and reflecting on that all week, all weekend, even today, about how much of I'm so busy, how much is that about letting go of that on a mind level? Just letting it go. And I think the practicalities of that for me have been to just recognize when I'm waking up feeling like I can't do something. And that's the biggest moment of pause for me. Just stop and ask yourself, is that really true? Yes, there are 30 things I could do other than recording this podcast. But my heart's calling the podcast, and so I can just pause on the other things for an hour. Maybe I'll come back to the other stuff. Maybe I won't. And what will that mean long term? Will that mean the end of my world? No, probably not. Some things are very, very important, definitely have to get done, right? But lots of things aren't, really. We place importance on them in our mind. So I think the big key learns from last week is that just because you're carrying around a belief doesn't mean it's true. Just because you've thought a certain way about something doesn't mean it's yours. Highly likely that came in externally and became part of your inner fabric. But the key is in understanding that was someone else's belief that just came in to you as a kid, that was stitched into you. And if that's the case, then is it possible that we could let that go, or that we could start to change that belief system, that we could almost decode and recode ourselves? Yes, that's absolutely true. Also, how everything that we think shapes our reality. If you think you're too busy, guess what? You are too busy. If you think you can have more space in life, guess what? You can have more space. And I know that some of you might listen to thinking, no, it's not like that at all. It might be like that for you, Toby, but it's not. But actually, I would challenge yourself to think differently. It all starts really with that level of thinking about it. What you think you are, what you think shows up in your results, what you think you create. It's so true. And a lot of what you think is on the back of these beliefs, often limiting beliefs, that were plugged into you when you were a kid. And they're not even yours. They're not even your beliefs. You didn't come in to this lifetime with those beliefs. So yeah, letting go is a mindset. And my question, my journal prompt, my question for reflection for you is, how can you channel more Greta energy? How can you let go a bit more? How can you be more like Greta? And even just anchoring in this moment right now and just taking a deep breath and just thinking about what's going on in your environment. What can you see? I've got a blind down at the moment because it's blocking out some of the light, but I can still see the beautiful blue sky. I can see the light, the way that it hits the fence. It's a bright sun. It's a bright sunny light. I can see the leaves on all the trees outside, the way that they're crinkling at the edges, that they're going slightly brown and brown and yellow, the way that some of them are falling, that there's no wind outside. Everything is perfectly still. And that occasionally there's a bird that just bobs up from a tree and then sweeps back down into another. That there's a tiny bit of fluff in the clouds way up high. And there's a few streaks in the sky where the clouds are making different shapes, but they're sort of blending in against each other. I feel very present in this moment. My cheeks feel warm. I'm feeling more space inside my body because I've been doing some of this breathing and this breath work, which is building a new tolerance for resistance almost. You know, when we have resistance in our body, it feels tight and constricting. But I feel like there's a space inside. I'm noticing that throughout my day, I'm taking some bigger, deeper breaths. I think because my body is getting used to breathing in a deeper way in this practice in the morning that I'm doing. And I'm noticing what my mind's saying. I'm listening and observing, and I'm witnessing my thoughts, and I'm not letting myself be all my thoughts. I'm just listening and witnessing and hearing what they're saying and hearing how many of them are wounded. They're kind of like they're wounded little thoughts that are floating around almost without arms and legs. They're just sort of floating around, and what they need to do is be caught and discarded, essentially, because so many of them are not true. So yeah, that's it for today. I hope it's been insightful, and I hope that you have taken something from this episode. And I think just trying to anchor in a bit on this mindset, this mentality that we're always so busy and that we're not free, we don't have space. If that resonates with you, then reflect on where that might come from and how can you be more Greta? How can you channel more Greta? So thank you so much for being here. For those of you that have left messages, I know some of you have left messages on my other Instagram at Sassy Sober Mom. I do really appreciate it. I love to hear that this podcast is lighting something within some of you, or you're just appreciating hearing the early stages of awakening. You know, that just, yeah, makes me feel so much more motivated to keep going and to keep sharing what's coming up for me and this wisdom that is bubbling away inside and enjoying being freed. And so until next time, take care, have a wonderful week.